Welcome to this episode of Why Pals Tales from the Superyacht Laundry. I am in sunny Mallorca. The sun turned up. Thank God for that. With the gorgeous Hannah Russell. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much. It's so exciting to be here.
It's actually fabulous for us to check in together because obviously you were part of my first international event when we came to Palma to do the Pearls of Wisdom event. And obviously, when we were putting a list together of who we'd want to talk to on the podcast, your name was like a beacon. Yeah, because it's like obviously you got up in front of a room full of women that you'd not met at the event and told your story, and that's really what, you know, encapsulates what I want Pearls to be. The advice that we can all give each other. And you ladies that are hopefully listening in the laundry right now, pay attention. So how are you doing?
Yeah, really good. Life is good. I'm happy the sun has come back. After 4 days of rain, that was enough. Thinking back to that event, it was such a great experience and really, yeah, an amazing opportunity to kind of talk to people who are where you were and, you know, give them some advice.
How did you get into the yachting industry?
I got into yachting in a very bizarre way. Like, I'd never heard of it. This is going back quite a long time. So Below Deck didn't exist and no one had ever really heard of it. I was living in London and getting more and more into debt after university. And my old boss, who I'd worked for years and years in my hometown, called me up and he was a chef. And he said, Hannah, I'm working on the superyacht and I need someone to come and help me in the galley. And I was like, okay. He said, go and get Delia Smith's three volumes of How to Cook from start to finish, read them, and then, you know, come and find me. And I was like, okay. So I went off to be a crew chef on a 60 metre.
What, just after reading Delia Smith?
Well, that was like, I had to, you know, learn the basics. I had done a bit of like kitchen portering.
Well, I know Delia is like the goddess of cooking.
Yeah, she was, yeah.
But, my mum's got
boiling an egg and stuff. So I arrived in Holland and I had absolutely no idea what to expect. No idea. And someone picked me up at the airport and I arrived at the shipyard. We were all staying in apartments. And then that was it. I kind of started as a crew chef on a 60 meter, which seems absolutely ridiculous. Now I know the industry, but we had a great crew and a great time. And we were there for 6 or 7 months in the apartments. But over this time, I used to, as we moved onto the boat and we were, you know, checking everything out, I used to see the girls having a great time outside. And I'd be like in the galley making 4 million muffins. And I was like, I want to be out there. So and it became quite apparent that I was not equipped to be a chef on a 60 meter. didn't quite cut it. I could do the sandwiches for lunch. But yeah, so I, as soon as the boat launched, I got off and I went to Antibes. And then, yeah, the rest is kind of history.
Can you remember, like, going back to that first, what your first impressions were? Can you, like, think, like, was you just in awe or shock or, like, what the hell am I doing? Delia's not good enough.
Yeah, I think there was just so much. It was just so different. You know, I'm from a small town in the border of Scotland and I've gone to university and then I've lived in London. And I think just suddenly you arrive in this, it was a totally different world, and yeah, just suddenly having to learn a new way of living. I think, you know, yachting really made me grow up in a way that I think it's quite like the discipline side of it, and I'd never really had that communal living and how, you know, you can't leave a spoon in the sink and
being tidy. Been mentioned on a few other episodes, like that little, you know, because obviously the next thing I ask is like, what did you love or hate? And we always remember the first chief stew that kind of beats us into,
yeah,
a stewardess.
Yeah.
You know, like, why am I polishing this? Why am I on my hands and knees looking up at a mirror? You know, the guest isn't going to get down there.
Yeah.
To see the streak marks,
yeah, yeah,
from that angle.
But it still needs to be done. Yeah. Yeah, I guess like that kind of, that ethic, that work ethic. I'd always had, I think I've always been quite a good, a hard worker, but I really, yeah, the coming, it was just so different to anything I'd ever experienced before. Just the scale of things and the...
And the budget of things.
And the budget of things and the poshness of things. And, you know, I was just, you'd go into this kind of, we were in the shipyard and moving on board. So you would open these crates in the storage and there would just be more cutlery than I've ever seen in my life, you know? And you'd just be like, where is this? What is this? You know, or like people would buy bean bags for the aftdeck and it would cost nearly, you know, 100,000 euros. And you'd be like... What, just insane, insane. But then you quite quickly become a bit accustomed to it. Don't you?
I can get used to this.
Yeah, I can get used to this. And then, yeah, just, I remember we had to stay in the guest quarters for the first crossing because the crew cabins weren't ready and we had to cover everything. And I just remember being scared to touch anything. Like I was just so scared of damaging.
I'm not meant to be
in there. If I touch that, you know, just that kind of just... quite overwhelming really, but yeah, you then kind of adapt a bit, don't you? It becomes
you do adapt. But yeah, I think I've slept in a guest cabin once in my whole career, but that was because we were in Monaco and it was, you know, we had extra crew and everything else. Yeah. I just wanted to be away from them. I'm gonna go sleep in there because you lot are just
I know where you are there
doing my head in. So yeah, the love hate you fell in love with. So you were in the galley, and then you turned the dark.
I was in the galley, and I did like it. And I think my old boss, who, you know, I'm so thankful, he gave me this break into this mad world that I'd never seen. He wanted kind of from me my organisational skills. So, you know, we were kitting out the galley and putting things, and I loved all that side of it. But the cooking every day and the I think you're either a chef or you're not, aren't you? You're not, you can't kind of pretend to be. And yeah, and so I was like, it just seemed more fun on the other side. It seemed more fun.
I would say it is more fun. Yeah. But then I never wanted to, you know, be a chef. I don't want to, no, not saying that chefs smell. It's the food, you know, like when you finish work, like it was bad enough finishing work when you were like a stew and you'd be a bit sweaty and still probably smelt a bit like food. But I just could not cope with smelling like...
It's a hard job.
Yeah.
It is one of the hardest. And when you're on your own in there, you know, just doing it all, I was just, I wasn't equipped to do that. So, and then when I came out into the stewardessing side of things, yeah, I definitely felt like I'd really found my groove.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, finding yachting was really like I'd loved being a waitress when I was young, and I loved that. being with people and the social thing and I'd really loved that, but no one had ever said to me this could be a career, you know, and so I really accidentally found it and then really felt like, well, yeah, I actually really love this. I love like loads of things about it. I think for me, I found the bit that I hated and then quite quickly kind of body swerved was the, you know, the cleaning things are already clean. Like nothing makes me want to die on the inside. Like when someone says, go detail that cabin, and you're like, I detailed that cabin like a week ago and no one's been in it. You know, and having to kind of, that was the thing that I hated the most. But then I just quite quickly was like, I'm much better at service. You know, I should, use me.
I didn't mind the detailing and stuff, but I think it would be completely different now. Because obviously if you're detailing right now, you're listening to a podcast. These things did not exist.
No, they didn't.
You know, it was basically albums and I was listening to music. So kind of just like, you just go with the flow.
And you only kind of had like what the guests had on the music system.
Oh,
do
you
remember? You
wanted to play it over the speakers.
Like little portable speakers, I guess they existed, but it wasn't like you didn't then have an iPod, like an iPhone to play everything, did you? So you had like kind of the guests' music on repeat in the cabin.
When you're going around and you're playing music, and iPhones weren't that great in the beginning to play your music on your hip.
Yeah.
But you know, we survived. Powered through.
We did.
Powered through. So obviously, you're looking at any places that stand out in that beginning period that, you know, you went and you were like, I am living my best life.
So really early on, so when I got off my first yacht, I then stayed really briefly in a crew house and met a girl. And we became really good friends and we were job hunting together. And really quickly, I met a woman who we did an interview with, and she was looking for two stews to move onto this boat. And we got a job, but the boat wasn't actually arriving for like 4 weeks. So what happened was she said, okay, well, we'd love to give you two the jobs. So I got a job with this girl. It'd become my really good friend. And then she said, and obviously we can't pay you till your contract starts, but we have an apartment here, so you can stay in our apartment while you wait. So me and her then just spent this 4 weeks on Antibes with like all the friends that we'd met crew hunting, and we knew we had a job to come to. And I remember sitting on the beach in Antibes, like really unglamorous, but just being like, yeah, this is, you know, a really, really cool, special moment where you're not worrying about getting a job. Or and I kind of felt like I definitely found something that I really wanted to do. And it was, yeah, a really, really good feeling. And we then spent that summer doing the med, like, properly nice. Doing the med on a really great boat with a really, really great crew that kind of became like family.
Nice.
And so it was just, I've been really lucky in my career to work for really great people and on really great boats. So yeah, that summer was a really special summer.
When Antibes good, it's really good.
Yeah.
Like for a crew, as you know, drinkers, going to the toilet bowl, that's what
yeah.
we called it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All of
never
that.
Really go swimming unless you're really drunk. Because we all know what happens in marinas.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
But Europe that summer, yeah, was really great. And I think when you first start out and you meet people and they all spread out, but then you all suddenly, yeah, we're all back in Cannes for the film festival, or we're all here. It's such a, and that's a really new, novel feeling when you start yachting, but you don't, you've never had that before, where you meet all these people, they all spread out, but then they all come back together. And yeah,
you have to go out because you don't know how long they're going to be here.
Exactly.
I'm just going to be good tonight, but yeah.
This is your moment.
So can obviously, you know, these are the good days, but can you remember when the job changed? That, you know, that kind of moment when this is not really me anymore.
I think I met my now ex-husband, but the person who became my husband, we met on board, well, we were on different boats, and we then started working together. And I was on a boat that we sat for 6 months in one place and 6 months in another place, outside our owner's house, and in both places. And the monotony of that job, just, I mean, it was a great job. We were together, lovely crew again.
It was boring.
And I just got bored. And I just thought, yeah, this is kind of like, I don't really know where I'm going. I was chief stew by then, and it just became a bit monotonous. And I thought, yeah, maybe I should go and, you know, try and do something else. So I left then, and my ex-husband, he actually got offered another job. So we thought, you know, this is a good time for us to do this. But then I went back home, lived with my parents. And very, very quickly, I was a bit like, I'm not sure. So yeah, then I went back and temped on an old boat of mine, and kind of we got back. And so I did come back again, and then I actually went back to work on that boat that I was telling you about that was in the med. I went back to work for the same captain and purser on, and our same old owner on his new build. And that was my final yacht, and we went and I did the new build, and we went off and did kind of a year and a half. But then I was like, I think I'm ready. I was 30 and or just about to turn 30. And I think I thought, you know, I think I'd like to kind of, I'm done now. Yeah. I think missing lots, because we also back then didn't have rotation.
No.
That wasn't a thing. So I'd been at work for like 8 years with probably 3 or 4 weeks off a year.
It's just mad when you think about it, how little time you actually have off.
Yeah.
And if a boat doesn't go anywhere, you know, there's no exciting element and stuff like that. You know, it's...
Yeah. And so I think that was probably, for me, it was just a culmination of many different factors that were kind of like, no, it's time now.
Yeah.
And I think that does make a difference to longevity now in the industry, the fact that people... there are much more rotation options, and you know, you can have a bit more of a normal life, whereas then it was, yeah, I'd missed so much.
Yeah.
And we'd had like holidays that were fully booked, cancelled, and yeah, weddings and births, and I just thought, yeah, I'm a bit done now. So I left. And I think I would have gone back, but I literally got pregnant that month.
So do I need to ask, did you have an exit strategy? You got pregnant.
Yeah, that wasn't a strategy. Well, I do remember being on that last boat, and I knew that I was going to leave, and I thought, right, save. And I tried like really weird, I remember now, it's just coming back to me after we spoke before, really weird things. Like I'd done, we were in the middle of nowhere in Costa Rica for ages, and I was like, right, I'm going to learn how to quilt. This is going to be the thing I'm going to do. Don't know why.
Quilt?
Like when you make old school quilts. So I bought like all the cutting board and everything. I had it stashed on board. And I was like, yeah, no, never did that. Then I decided that I was going to learn. A new skill while I still had the time.
Yeah.
I still had the time and I was getting paid. And I tried all these really random things. And I thought, no, I'm going to try something useful. I'm going to do an online like accounting course. Failed at doing that as well. Like just everything, like, I had such good intentions and like knew that this was the right thing to do and just didn't manage to do anything, and then left. And yeah, had absolutely no idea of what I was going to do.
So you left to live where? You didn't go back to the folks then, obviously.
Well, I originally went back to my parents, but what had happened is the holiday before that we put an offer in on a house in Mallorca. So I kind of knew that we had somewhere that I could go to. Mm-hmm. And the plan then was that I was going to move here, the slight plan. I would move here while my partner still was at work, and I would go back and temp for the summer to pay off this massive debt of this house that we just bought. But no, instead I got pregnant, and then we lived with a sofa and a mattress for about 8 months while we paid up all our debt. So that was our amazing strategy. Yeah.
Mm. How was it having a child in a country that you'd never lived full time before?
Much harder than I think I had thought it was going to be. In lots of ways, I've been really, really lucky in that I made some friends when I was pregnant, both ex-yachties. We randomly met at some yoga class that I'd made myself go to. But I found that process of, I'd left, and I remember stepping off this boat in the Galapagos, because that's where I finally left, and just being like, yeah, you know, it's off an 80-meter, you know, I had this great crew, and stepping off this boat, and we had some money in the bank, and yeah, I was like happy, really, really like excited about the future. And then, you know, 5 months later, I can remember sitting in this house that we bought and just feeling really alone, because you suddenly, for 8 years, I'd had a community around me, a ready built community of people constantly.
Yep.
Constantly. People to do things with, people to, you know, have great times with, to argue with, and then suddenly I had no one, and I also didn't have a job. So you kind of like, where's your in?
Yep.
Like, what do you do to meet people in a country where
I
didn't speak the language?
How do you remember how to meet people?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people are like, you know, you step off and you make friends. I'm like, I haven't had to make a friend for, like, obviously 8 years,
yeah,
10 years.
They just
get
handed to you.
You just get people like put in front of you. You either talk to them a lot or a little, depending where you are.
It's so funny you say that. I remember meeting these two women who are still my really good friends at this. I'd gone to this yoga class in Parma because I'd been like, right, you've got to go and do something. Got to try and meet people. And I went to this class in Parma, and I was late because I couldn't park, I couldn't really drive. And I was like, oh, God, the whole thing was stressful, and I was hot and sweaty. And I turned up, and these two women were there, also a bit late. And I kind of made myself go over and say, I could hear them speaking English. And I said hi to them, and they were like, oh, come for a coffee with us afterwards, because they knew each other. And I went for a coffee, and we exchanged numbers. And I remember driving home feeling like, it's like when you meet like a boy, you know, how long do you leave it before you text them? And how long, like, should I invite them over? Or, like, it was really like dating friends. It was so weird. And yeah, I think once you kind of get an in with some people, or you kind of break the ice somewhere, it exponentially happens, doesn't it? You then meet more people and you get a bit more confident. But I really really hadn't kind of thought it through, because I thought I was a very social person. I'm really social, I'm really like, you know, but then I remember going to sit in the square in my village and sometimes seeing people and thinking, I think, you know, maybe I would like to talk to them, but what do? You walk up to someone who's sitting at a table and just say hi. Like, it's a weird thing, isn't it?
It is a weird thing. So you're looking for common, like common ground, you know. Mm. Obviously on board, you've all got that, you're all there to, you know, serve a purpose.
Yeah.
You've got your common ground. So that's your starting point.
Yeah.
And then obviously then the friendships develop around it. But yeah, I found it really hard.
Mm.
You know, how do you talk to people? And then also like non-yachty friends, it's quite difficult, because when you talk to them, they're like, they just think that you've been living a rock star life. And don't get me wrong, it was great, but it was also hard. So it's difficult to find common ground.
Yeah, because also I'd kind of been out of society for 8 years, because I keep talking about back then like I'm a dinosaur, but there was like, our boat used to swing around and you had no internet. It wasn't, everything wasn't accessible. So people would be like, have you watched this film? I'd be like, no, there's like a gap of 10 years in my life where I had no cultural experiences like everyone else. And that's another thing. That
do you think any of the skills that you learned on board helped you with, you know, life? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. That thing that I said, that it really helped me grow up and learn how to look after myself a lot more, and how to kind of, I don't want to say that self-discipline is not kind of, but having that kind of how to do things. And when I first bought the house, I kind of went the other way though, and so people would come and stay and I'd put out a breakfast buffet, you know. I remember the first time I went shopping and I bought like 20 litres of white vinegar. I think I've still got some. I found that adjustment to land life, and now people come and I'm like, there's the cupboard, you know. I put out placemats and, you know, different bowls of things, and so in that way I've kind of reverted back to old Hannah. But I think you can take the good things
because you get a bit over excited. I remember like when I moved in with my husband, and he was like bringing his, you know, introducing me to his friends, and we had him barbecues and stuff like that, and I honest to god, his friends were like not horrified, but they were just shocked. They were like, you've got prawns and steak and everything else. And I went round their house and literally we had burgers and hot dogs, and then basically some crisps.
Yeah.
And then obviously in my house, you've got two different types of salads, you know, like, there wasn't any burgers. We had like different chicken on skewers, like I'd literally been out making these kebabs and things. Yeah, no, you get a little bit. I still like hosting, like I do like up in the ante, much to my husband's dismay, because obviously it takes a party from, you know, 100 quid to 400 quid. You can rein it in.
Yeah.
Rein it in a little bit.
And I think the other thing that I found hard was, like, you know, cleaning my own house. I'm like, I used to get paid to clean.
That is still...
And now I'm just doing it because I have to.
I don't want to do it. Like, I literally don't. Unless I'm being paid a lot of money, I don't want to do it. You know, I want... Especially when I moved into a house full of men, I'm like, I can't get it clean enough. If I take them out of the house, it's probably bearable. But yeah, the cleanliness, the OCD stuff. I mean, I'm one of those psychos that irons. I iron everything.
Do you?
Still, I can't not. So I can't not. It really, I can't get into a bed that's not pressed.
No.
Because if anybody deserves to get into a bed that's been ironed after the amount of duvets I've ironed.
Yeah, that is
that
true.
I deserve it, but I also have to...
You need a roller iron.
I did look into that, but I don't actually have a utility room to put the thing in. But I do have, like, my mum's like, what is that, when she saw my iron, because it's got like an extra large tank.
Oh, yeah.
So, because I don't want to slow down.
No,
like,
no,
it's one of those huge ones.
Yeah.
I'm crazy, sort of crazy. So, you're on the island, you're pregnant, baby obviously comes out.
Yeah.
What job did you know? Where did the idea come from for your business?
So originally, after I had Noah, I was definitely very much like, I quite want to work again. I missed working. I missed the social side of it, and you suddenly realise when you live on land how quickly money disappears when you are paying for things that you haven't had to pay for forever. And so when he was little, obviously I didn't work. And then when he started going to Escoleta, which we put him in fairly early so he could get the language and socialise in the village that we live in. So about 18 months, I think he was. I then started looking for other things I could do. And I started working for an event company because it was something I'd loved from that side of...
Transferable skills.
I can do parties.
Yeah, I can do that. And I worked for a company that hired out event furniture. And I really enjoyed it for a while. But just really quickly, it became apparent that it was just not compatible with having a small child. And what happens is if you leave yachting and you have a partner who is still in yachting, you are kind of a single parent for quite a lot of the time. So
hospitality work isn't very forgiving with childcare.
No, not at all. And then you're at work when they're not at school, so you kind of start thinking, what am I doing? Or I would get phone calls about someone's wedding chairs at 7 o'clock on a Friday when I'm trying to feed him or put him to bed. And I'd be like, yeah, this is just, it's not really working. So after I kind of stopped that, and all the time I'd been like, had this like an idea of something I could do with yachting. And my original kind of thought process had been, you know, all those funny things that you have on yachts that you can't ever get, like butter dishes where you scrape the butter flat. And, you know, all those little kind of accessories that are always difficult to find. I'd kind of thought about having a supply company that did that, but it just didn't really excite me. Yeah, it didn't really get me going. It was kind of like, this feels like a thing, but not something that I love. And then I don't know if I was depressed, but I got a bit like, you know, everything was just a bit of a drama and an effort. And I started running. And so I'd see out in the countryside loads of plastic things that people had thrown away. And then I started to do with the money and everything. I'd be like, we go shopping and buy shower gel. And then I squeeze it down the shower. And then I'd throw the thing away. And then I have to take the rubbish out. And then I have to hang the rubbish out, and then I have to go shopping again. And I was just like, this cycle seems really pointless. It's a depressing thought. But it was also the amount of waste that me and a baby were creating.
Oh, yeah.
Because we have to separate our rubbish where we live. So we're putting out 3 or 4 big bin bags of plastic waste every week. And I just started thinking, maybe I can do something about this. So I started trying to make little changes here and there and see where I could, you know, use less plastic, really. And it was the start of something called the Zero Waste Movement about 6 years ago. So I was reading about this and a woman called Bea Johnson. And as I made all these changes, people started asking me, where did you get this? So I was using kind of fabric vegetable bags instead of the plastic ones, which 6 years ago no one had ever seen. And so, or bamboo toothbrushes and all these things. So my friends started asking where I'd got them. And I thought, oh, well, maybe this is kind of the business that I've been looking for. And it's something that I do really feel passionately about. And yeah, maybe this is it. And so that was kind of how it started.
So when did you go, right, I'm creating the company. I'm going to go for it.
I've got a friend. Are you allowed to swear on this podcast?
Yeah. You are.
I've got a friend and I've kind of, she's an amazing woman here on the island, Emma Boardman. And she, I've been kind of talking about it and saying, what do you think about this? And she was like, do you know what, Hannah, you just got to sometimes just fucking do it. And I was like, okay. So like literally the next day, I was like, right, I got 5 products that I'd kind of sourced and I made a website and another friend of mine at the time helped me. And we just kind of, I just did it and put 5 products out there that I knew you couldn't buy anywhere else. And I went and got registered as an autonomo. And then I had an online shop and I used to do markets. So I started selling toothbrushes, fabric vegetable bags, menstrual cups, silk dental floss, really random assortment of items, and old-fashioned razors. And those were my first 5 things. And I just started market stalls. And what happened with the village that I live in has quite a big yachting expat community.
Right.
And a couple of stewardesses came to my stall one day when I was at a market there and were like, oh, we can use all this stuff on board. And so it kind of just spiraled from then because I was like, wow, this makes total sense. So, yeah, crossed over.
Starting a business is always difficult. Could you highlight a high and a low from that journey initially?
High and a low. I found, I don't know if it's a high or low, but the beginning, the catch 22, I found really hard of starting a business, like going to approach people about what your wholesale price is, but no one would tell you anything until you had a business number. But then to have a business number, you have to pay loads of money. So you kind of have to, this is a real, like that was one of my sticking points at the beginning, was how do you kind of start? And so when I finally took that plunge and did that, I remember feeling like that was a real high when I kind of was like, right, yeah, this is, you know, people want this stuff and this is going to work, and seeing the first orders come in online. And that was a real, I used to have everything in the cupboard in the bedroom and yeah, being able to pack things up and send it out. That was, yeah, a real, real high. And I think a low, and it still is for me, is kind of when, if people, I think it's a real social media kind of thing, when people, I used to put out a lot more kind of information. And when people kind of start questioning your integrity, or whether they kind of, they're asking really good questions, but kind of make, when I start doubting myself, or I'm like, you know, things that make me go, you know, people, you put yourself out there with a business and then people can be very harsh. And I think that for me was like those first moments when someone, I would be like, you know, this is good for this. And someone would say, but yeah, that's still got plastic in this part of it. And I'd be like, well, yeah, it does. But, you know, this is why it's still better than this thing. And they're like, yeah, you're just kind of, this is not, you know, people really sometimes fight back. And I'd be like, oh, no, you know, like, I'm just trying to do the best thing I can. And
is that because it's like, obviously, the eco products? Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of judgment.
There's a lot of judgment. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you're kind of, by providing it, you're in the debate.
Yeah, exactly. And I found that really hard at the beginning. Now I'm much more, you know, this is kind of, this is what I'm offering. I think this is the best alternative. I'm super open to have really good conversations. And like, my mind has definitely been changed on loads of things. And informed people love learning, love hearing more. But when people are just kind of attacking you for the sake of it, it feels a bit, you know. But now it's not so bad.
No, it's good. What advice would you give a lady that wants to, you know, she's got a passion and, you know, wants to start a business? Would you give her, what would you say to her if she's listening right now?
Do the opposite of everything I did. Call me, I'll tell you what I did. Don't do any of that. I think, so when you're starting a business, like I started without actually knowing absolutely anything about starting a business. I think I was very like, oh yeah, that's easy. You know, you just get a logo, you get a thing and you do it. And I read loads and loads of things about making a business plan and all that. And I kind of skim read a business plan and be like, yep, got that, it's in my head, fine, done. But I think finally, sort of 2 years ago, I went and spoke to a business advisor, really. And they made me go right back to the basics of when you start a business, you kind of need to know what your business is and who your business is for. And there's a thing with having a business where you need to be solving a problem.
Yes,
that's what you're doing, isn't it? You have to be solving a problem, and then you have to kind of tell everyone how you're solving that problem for them. And this is something that I never did. I was like, here's my toothbrushes, buy some, you know. And you think that kind of people will just come and do that, and there's a lot of, you know, people dedicate their lives to marketing and you know, all of these things. And I think maybe having a little, you don't have to spend a lot of money, but getting some advice about starting a business is quite a good place to start.
Yeah.
Instead of having to go back and do it retrospectively, where you've made some mistakes already.
It's loads different now. Like, there is, at your fingertips, there is a lot of information. And I think, you, like, for me, for instance, with Pearls, I've never thought of this as a business. I've always seen that there's an issue. So obviously starting this was, I don't want anybody to experience what I went through.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like you were saying, don't do what I did. I'm like, don't do what I did.
Yeah.
It's got to be a better way. So I've never, never since starting, I was just like, oh, just get girls together and we'll have a great time. Yeah. We'll all share stories and yeah. everything else. I'm like, mm. And I was like, yeah, but it is a business. It's still, you know, even to break even, you've still got to treat
yeah.
it
yeah.
like a business. And I think that exactly the same as you, like a bit of a shock, like I need to yeah. actually do some study.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't just magically become a business owner overnight.
Yeah.
You know, there is lots of factors that you need to kind of at least think about.
Yeah. I think maybe a similarity with our businesses, but our businesses, is that especially when you're doing something that you feel really passionately about and you love it, you're like, no, the money side, it's kind of like you don't want to talk about it, do yes. you? Like, that's not why, this is not why I'm doing this. And I think it's not why you're doing it, but it has to be a part of why you're doing it, because otherwise it's not sustainable in any factor. And you can think it is, but eventually if you're not getting paid for something that you're dedicating a lot of your time to, then long term,
it's not going to work.
It's, you know,
it's not going to work.
It's not going to work.
It's not going to work. But passion, this is from somebody else's, I was listening to their podcast. Passion is important because you need it to get yeah. through the hard times.
100%.
Like, you have to, you know, when I was quite poorly last year, wasn't really sure how to get Pearls to progress, and I was literally just sitting there like, I just don't know. But I ended up getting a message from a lady that was kind of struggling, and then I pointed her in the right direction, like, but I can't stop. Because that's the whole point.
Yeah.
You know, that was the reason. Like, it's like,
it sparked yeah.
you.
Again,
you know, when the universe is going, anyway, I know you're yeah. feeling sorry for yourself, but look.
It's your why. This is why you are doing
yeah.
this.
Yeah.
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 I think a bit of advice as well is that I think you don't need a business partner, but I think just having somebody that, like a mentor or somebody that you can talk to about your business, because I just kind of plowed on for a really long time thinking I don't have the money to invest in somebody to talk, and I'm like, I can do this on my own, I don't need anyone else, you know, not that I don't need anyone else, but it was kind of like, I don't really know, my friends were great, but nobody kind of has the knowledge that I needed.
You needed an external, like the external yeah. view of your business,
yeah.
you know, because obviously friends and relations, they'll give you their view, but obviously they're basically yeah. linked. You need that.
And it gets
external,
a bit lonely.
Yeah.
You know, it gets quite, when you're having to make every single decision and every single thing. And then when I had a shop, I was going like, I'm doing everything from like brokering this deal with a, you know, an ethical company in India to making sure the toilet's clean. And everything in between, yeah. and it can get a bit overwhelming. And I think if you just, even if you have someone, an accountability person or a, you know, a business mentor that you check in with once a month, that can kind of, I feel like that's a really good thing to have.
Yeah, it's really good. I have a person now. Her name's Matt. She just tells me to do stuff.
I love that.
When my brain is just overloaded, she's just like, do this.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah, just do it.
Checklists.
She's too nice to me as well, because then obviously, like, eventually I'll get it. I'm like, oh, that makes loads of sense. She's like, yeah, no, doesn't it? Sorry, Max. I get there in the end. Talking about, obviously, your passion, like, the eco side of things, are there positive changes in the yachting industry at the moment? Are you seeing good things happening? Where are we at?
Yeah. There is a massive, massive change in yachting in the last 5 years since I've been in this space. I think when I first started, I remember posting on Palmer Yacht Crew, and there was just almost, you know, I think there was one other company that's been around for a long, long time in the south of France. But here there was kind of no one else offering this service specifically to yachts. And since then, there are loads of brilliant, brilliant companies that are all coming through in different ways, all focusing on different areas. And I think now, if you start a company in yachting, you have to have considered the environmental side
yep.
of whatever it is that you're doing. Otherwise, you're kind of not going to get anywhere. I think it's something that crew think about, captains think about, management companies are thinking about. Whether people are just doing it lip service because they have to for sustainability factors and things like that, but you know, it's still
right
being considered.
I suppose, you know.
Yeah, and I think overwhelmingly, the crew and that side of things, everyone is rooting for positive change and trying to do what they can within their limitations.
Well, we all love the planet. I think, you know, one of the things I loved about yachting is I fell in love with the planet. My list of places I wanted to go only ever got longer, it never got shorter. And we do care. So like you said, at least people are trying.
Yeah.
They're trying.
And I think the thing that I'm kind of hearing a bit more now as well is a lot of changes, not a lot, but more change is being driven from owners, or they are more interested. So in the products that they're using, you know, at least 3 or 4 yachts, even this season, have said to me, yep, can you send me sample boxes? I need to send everything to my owner. Whereas when I started, it was more like
luxury stuff.
Yeah, we're just going to try and get this. We'll get the stuff for the crew, but the owners still want, you know, X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, so now the crew have nicer, better products for them and the planet than the owners do, you know? And then gradually that's changing. So that's, I think, a big positive as well. So if it comes from the top down, no one argues with it.
No.
It's when you have to, I hear a lot from stews that, you know, yeah, I'd love to do this, but budget and this, and, you know, maybe the engineer's not quite like feeling it. And I'm like, okay, but if it comes from the top down, no one, there's no.
You've been told.
Yeah.
You've been told. So before we wrap this up, 5 years from now, what's Hannah Russell up to? Like, what's going on?
That is a good question. What's going on?
Ask the universe. Like, this is what I see next.
Well, this year we've launched a new, our own brand, actually, which is super exciting, called Ocean. And this is where I think I'd like to see Viveco moving. It's kind of the products that I couldn't find. So things that I want it to tick every box. I want it to be a luxury product. I want it to, you know, be available and refill. I want them to be able, you know, to be the best thing they can for the planet and for people. So we've just launched a sun cream actually this year.
Ooh.
Yeah, really exciting. It's refillable in aluminium. And this is one of these things I couldn't find for years because alternatives to sun creams were in a tin and guests don't want that. So I think bridging that gap between yachting and the products that are available and making them work on both. So I think 5 years from now, I think Viveco has a actual studio shop, maybe somewhere in Santa Catalina. And our own brand, our own range of products that, you know, fill in all those little bits that I can't quite provide at the moment. That's where I'd like it to be.
I think you'll probably get there. I'm not going to lie. You'll probably fall down a lot along the way, we all do.
Yes, you'll do.
But no, it's, you know, like one of the reasons why I wanted to speak to you, you know, it is a passion that turned into a job.
Yeah.
Which doesn't feel like a job.
Yeah.
You know, and that is the ultimate goal, you know. Yeah. And also, I think you've put the positive, I think yachties are really positive, positive mental attitude, and you just keep going.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Keep going.
And I think, you know, I come into work and work. I find it really funny to call it work, but yeah, I come into work and, you know, on Friday morning, I've got to go and deliver all the way along the Paseo before I go to the boat show. And I just think, you know, I look forward to seeing all of those, you know, the clients that have kind of become friends and, yeah, hearing how people are putting in effort and making change. It is a really positive thing. And you have to concentrate on the positive. I think there's lots of negatives. There's enough negatives around, aren't there?
There is enough negatives, but, you know, it can also steer you in a different direction, which could end up being even better.
Yeah.
You know, an eternal optimist.
Yeah.
It's a good word. And when I'm not, I've got Max. just ignores my misery. Going that way. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. Obviously, it's so lovely to just catch up with you in general. Thank you for bringing the sun. I put that wholly on your shoulders.
Oh, thanks. I can't really take credit, but I'll have it.
So, obviously, with Viveco and Ocean, did you say?
Yeah.
Obviously, for the ladies that are listening at the moment and you come to Mallorca, obviously you've got a website as well, so any of these eco products and you want to know a bit more, we are going to do an episode, just an excuse to come back to the island probably, about the eco and the environment later on, and obviously what your seas are doing to try and make a change. So I'll probably have you back on that. And you can tell me that it's all worked out well. You've got your own studio. Maybe we can record it in your studio.
Yeah, that would be
really
nice.
But thank you very much for coming on. All of the links to what Hannah Russell has created will be below. If you've really enjoyed this conversation, then we will be following it up with a conversation on the Pearls of Wisdom app. We'll have different talking points. Might even be able to convince Hannah to come in for the Thursday Night Live so you can ask her questions directly. So if you've liked this, obviously wait for the next episode. But thank you for joining us, and we'll see you again soon.
Thank you.